going to be a lot of news this offseason, isn't there? I mean, it goes every offseason there's news, but Arden, Shai, there's going to be a lot of news this offseason, isn't there?
That's going to be a ton of it. I mean, 40% of their big league roster is headed to free agency. And I don't know, you start to wonder what the opportunities may be like for this team this offseason, whether they may be a more significant transformation than perhaps we were expecting beyond the obvious. And maybe they're, you know, I think they're going to have to be some creativity. They're going to have to be creative in some way, because the free agent market's not good. So you're going to have to accomplish things through trade, and you're going to have to give something up to get something done in trade.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two different things going on. There is a long-term evolution of this organization, which is, you know, you've seen the changes in terms of some of the guys they brought in, and you're going to see changes in the way they handle the minor leagues, and spring training is going to change, and a bunch of things are going to change, and the cult, they're going to try and build a culture, which is a word we're going to hear a lot in the next few years, whether you like it or not. So there's a long-term change that at some point will produce a Blue Jays team that is the product of that culture and of that organization. But in the meantime, they got to figure out the next 2 years, when you have a window, a competitive window that probably is open, and you've got a pitching staff that is intact, and you've got a fan base that is very excited, and you know, they're kind of, so there's almost like there's two parallel currents here. And you know, the one is something we're probably not going to be paying much attention to until 2018, 2019, 2020. But this offseason is about that. You know, how do we get through these next 2 years, and what are the possibilities of the next 2 years? And I think you're right. It's going to be very, very active, while trying not to sacrifice too much, right? I don't think they want to sell the house here necessarily.
What's the hardest part of working in baseball ops, or really like any sport, really any professional sport management, is balancing short term and long term, and not trying to screw up either of them, and trying to be harmonious in both when there's 29 other teams trying to do the same thing. The thing that's interesting with where the Blue Jays are right now is it's not an obvious they need to rebuild. Mm. It's not an obvious they need to push all in, or it's not an obvious they're good enough, right? Like, they have so many different directions they could go in. They could feasibly, I don't think they will, they could feasibly do very little this winter, mm-hmm. and say, yeah, Dalton Pompey, you're going to get 600 plate appearances in a corner outfield spot. You know, Melvin Upton Jr., you're playing a lot. Zeke, ooh, you're playing a lot. You know, ooh, Justin Smoke, ooh, you're starting every single day.
Can we start over?
Yeah, I don't think can I just say, for those people who've just driven off the road, yeah. I don't think they're going to do that.
So yeah, that is one of their options. Yeah. Or they could go out and really, you know, try to, you know, trade for some really strong contributors on both sides of the ball and get better. Or they could rebuild and they could tear it down. There really mm-hmm. is. All the options are on the table.
But I think the middle one's what's going to happen. You know, I it's funny, you know, thinking back to this season, if this season had gone, you know, a couple of pitching injuries, right? And this season could go very differently. Let's mm-hmm. just say that, right? So, you know, you had an incredibly consistent starting staff. That was the strength of the team. That's what carried you through the season. They only went 7 starters deep. Everybody knows what they got out of Estrada, got out of Hap. If that goes differently and this team, you know, scuffles back to 500 or so, is out of the postseason, then we would be talking teardown, yeah. right? We would be saying mm-hmm. they're gonna try and dump some of that payroll commitment. But, you know, really because of that, starting pitching being as good as it was, and the bullpen coming together eventually, we're talking about something, you know, not quite a kind of more of a reload, more of a tweak.
You know, and you know, I guess the difference for me is that I see this retooling, maybe for the first time since I've been doing this show, it's a retooling that isn't necessarily being forced by financial concerns. I mean, obviously, money's part of it because there will be a number, and Edwin and Jose are free agents, so obviously money's an issue. But what I'm saying is, all things being equal, I don't see Mark Shapiro looking at two players and going, you know what? This guy is better than this guy, but this guy makes $5 million a year more, so I'm going to go with the guy who makes $5 million a year less. That's one of the few, at least I don't think, when you're talking about a core player, I don't think that's as much a part of the equation as it used to be.
Well, I wonder if we may see more transactions that similar in vein to the Francisco Liriano at mm-hmm. the trade deadline, where you take the guy that you want, but you take some bad money with it, or some money that a team doesn't want, and you use your financial might in that fashion. And I think that may be the wiser course than generally than spending in free agency is going to be this offseason.
100%.
And I think if you just look at it more on a macro level, this winter sets up to me a little bit like the offseason 2014 heading into 2015, where you had just a bunch of teams looking to reshape themselves, a free agent market that's not going to tend to those needs, and you could get a lot of trading. And so I wonder if this winter meetings we may see just it barf up a bunch of moves the way that it did at 2014 in San Diego. And I think the opportunity for some pretty creative GMing is going to exist over the next couple of months.
Creative is a good word, though, yeah. You know, because that Liriano deal is, plus they got some future back in that deal, right? So that's I would describe that as a creative bit of GMing. It was one of the things, again, one of Alexanthopoulos' favorite words was being creative, right? But I think you're right. There's going to be those kind of deals where it's a combination of exploiting other people's financial situations, maybe. And again, I don't think the payroll is going to go nuts here, but I do think it's going to go up. So if you have a little bit of leeway financially that maybe other teams don't, if you can get a little bit of future back along with a bit of present, take a little bit more financial risk. I think those are exactly the kind of deals they're going to want to do. Now, whether you can do them or not, whether they're out there, that's, you know, just you need two teams. That's what they're going
to
want to do.
It was made pretty clear to me in the second half just from talking to some people that you know, the Jays do have it, and we're probably not conditioned to think of it this way. But comparatively speaking, I mean, once you get past the Red Sox, the Dodgers, like the Cadillac financial franchises, comparatively speaking, the Jays have a lot more financial clout than a lot of other teams in baseball, than Pittsburgh, teams of that nature. So you I think, Shai, you may be right. You may see them doing some pretty creative shopping with teams like the Pirates. The other thing I wonder, and I'll ask you this.
Sure.
We know that Mark Shapiro's got a lot of feelers out everywhere, because it seems as if there's 7 general managers now, quote unquote, mentored or worked under him or something like that. And I'm wondering if maybe that doesn't make pulling off a deal a little easier, because, you know, even Alex would admit there are guys you turn to first, right? When you're making a deal, there's guys you trust, guys you can talk to frankly. Guys, you know, you can get a deal done with quickly if you need to. And I wonder if maybe that helps Mark, the fact that he knows so many people. It's not that they owe him or he's owed one by them, but, you know, if Mark Shapiro calls the new GM in Minnesota, he's going to pick up the phone because he got his job because of Mark Shapiro. And I'm wondering if that might have a role in this too.
Yeah, when you're playing poker, it helps to know how the other guys are going to play certain hands, right? It helps to know when you see the 3-card flop, like what the other guy is likely to do. You know, it helps to have that information and that knowledge. Yeah, and that was Alexanthopoulos spent the first few years of his tenure kind of building that knowledge. He got to a place, you know, with guys like Dave Dombrowski and, you know, Jack Z and the guys that he made deals with, where he's like,
Billy Bean for sure. Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, guys that he eventually would pull off really big deals with, whether it's, you know, David Price, Josh Donaldson. He studied those guys, he learned them, and then he used that knowledge to his advantage.
We'll talk a little bit more about the future, but I do want to ask you this. John Gibbons is back as manager. Does anybody have a problem with that at all in this group?
Certainly nobody in the media is going to have a problem with that.
Okay. But there might be a couple. Realistically, though, I mean, is this the right – I'll rephrase that. Is this the right move? At this time, is this the right move? Or – you know, the flip side is you're probably going to lose Eddie. You're probably going to lose Saunders. You're probably going to lose Jose. You're going to lose a lot of big personalities. Maybe you need somebody else in here. Again, I'm playing the devil's advocate, but maybe with new personalities coming in, you need a new manager.
Well, except that, you're still going to have Tulowitzki. You're still going to have Martin. You're still going to have Donaldson, right, who are the dominant personalities on that team. It's still going to be – you're going to have kind of a core group. And I'm not sure how much rope John Gibbons is ever going to have with guys who didn't hire him. And there will be probably a time where somebody will say, well, the next natural move for this team is to change the manager. But, you know, you're kind of staying the course next year in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I know there is going to be a lot of transition, but in a lot of ways you're going to stay the course. You're going to have the same pitching staff probably, or very close to it. So it kind of makes sense to me you keep him there.
It's just hard to build a case against bringing him back.
Yeah.
You know, because he can't do it based on results, because he went to the ALCS 2 years in a row. You can't do it based on, you know, managing personalities and managing a clubhouse. What team has a crazier and more diverse array of personalities? Mm-hmm. than the Toronto Blue Jays, who had, we'll look back on this someday and say, oh my God, like Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson, Troy Tulowitzki, we're all in the same club.
And they didn't kill each other.
Right?
And not that we know.
And, and there were some guys in there who were in their early 20s and just beginning their careers as well. So you can't make that case. You can't really make a tactical case. You just can't make it.
You've got an article up on sportsnet.ca about the new core of the Blue Jays. Again, Tulowitzki, Martin. And I think we kind of saw maybe in spring training that started to develop. But I want to ask all three of you this. I'll go around the table. I'll start with Arden. What is the Jays clubhouse with Tulowitzki and Russ Martin and Josh Donaldson as the core? How different is that going to be from the clubhouse we saw this year? And I know we need to see who comes in yet, but a lineup without Jose and Edwin, that's a lot of home runs. That's a lot of power. How different do you think this team will look sort of in terms of an offensive philosophy, if you want to call it that, next year?
The lineup's a lot more interesting to me because it depends. Because look, the clubhouse, I mean, this year, you know, Edwin's such a quiet guy, just goes about his business. Jose has been on an island all year.
He really has.
It really has in a lot of ways been that kind of trifecta's clubhouse.
So you don't think there's going to be like this vacuum or anything left?
Just in terms of power numbers, I think.
Mostly. Not in terms of people, though.
I don't think that I think if anything, removing Jose Bautista's personality from the clubhouse might loosen things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really think over the course of this year, Troy Tulowitzki's influence has grown on this team. And in a lot of ways, it's sort of become his club. I found it interesting that he was the one who called the players only meeting in September. He was the driving force behind that meeting, by all accounts. So in terms of that aspect, I really think that you're just going to see him emerge further, which was something he didn't feel so much comfort in doing last year when he got parachuted into the situation and at the end of July, and there were already these existing clubhouse structures. Josh Donaldson will move into that vacuum a little bit more. Russell Martin is already right there. Yep. So I don't think that's going to be a significant factor. I agree with you 100%, Arden. The lineup is going to be the issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some schools of thought that one thing that perhaps hurt this team was a factor is that when guys were slumping or whatever the case was, there was nothing that John Gibbons could do. All the guys were everyday players who you're not taking out of the lineup. And that maybe if you're running a couple platoons in a couple spots with athletic guys who can give you different things, if one guy goes ice cold, well, now you've got someone else you can shift to and reallocate some playing time. And so I wonder if we might see a platoon or two in one of the outfield corners, and maybe that's a way that this offense sort of transforms itself a bit from one completely reliant on home runs to one that puts a few more balls in the gaps and can use some speed to do some things.
I want to ask you two guys, you know, because you saw the team way more day to day than I did. And back to the personality question, but Martin, Tulowitzki, Donaldson are intense would be one way of describing it, but that they're kind of tightly wound, right? All three of those guys, they're different in their own ways, but they're very tightly wound. Was that ever a double-edged sword this year? Because I'll tell you, I think if you had a team that was in trouble, you know, that was falling out of contention in June or something, I think it definitely would be a double-edged sword to have guys who were wired that way. But I'm wondering if you thought at any time this year that core was a little, you know, that there wasn't any relief in that clubhouse.
I think you do get a sense where certain guys might be like, wow, like, why won't these guys just relax for a second? Mm-hmm. But the positives of a player who brings that mindset to the field, I think, far outweigh any potential negatives, because it's a guy that you know is going to show up every night and try to win as hard as he can. It's a guy who you know is going to run through a wall and is going to play. You think about how much Josh Donaldson and especially Russell Martin played through this year in terms of Russell Martin's caught the second most innings of any catcher in the American League over the last 2 years to Sal Perez. And Sal Perez is like indestructible, right? Russ Martin's about, he's going to turn 34 this winter. He's an old guy, right? And he played through a lot this year. So I think you take the benefits of that mindset and that personality over the, any potential drawbacks.
You know, and the point was made that Russell Martin was a guy who provided a lot of perspective through tough times. I remember having a conversation with Kevin Pillar just a couple of weeks ago and him pointing to Russ as the guy who said, you know what? I've been through this, like, ride this one out. It's going to be okay. This has happened to me before. And he can draw on experience. And because he's been in the postseason in nine of 11 seasons, guys tend to listen to him. Guys tend to, he tends to have a little, hold a little bit more cachet than perhaps some other people. So I think there is a bit of a balance there. And I think some of the youth in the clubhouse is good in terms of trying to keep things loose. But ultimately, in any situation where a team isn't performing, you're never going to have a good mix. There's never a good mix for that, right? Because guys carry their frustrations. And you know, those three, are, you know, Donaldson and Tulowitzki in particular, probably carry their frustration a little bit harder than most. I think Tulowitzki's a little bit quieter in his frustration, goes a little bit more inward, whereas Josh Donaldson's frustration may present itself a bit more outwardly. But I'm not sure that was ever a key part of the problem.
The Jays aren't going to the World Series, but we would like to send you and a friend to the World Series, Game 4 of the World Series. It's time now to tell us the Win Your Way to the World Series code word and be the ninth caller through at 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. You will win an all-inclusive trip for two to Game 4 of the World Series, courtesy of our friends at Miller Lite, the official beer of Major League Baseball in Canada. The prize includes return airfare from Toronto, two-night accommodations, $500 U.S. spending money, and a pair of tickets to Game 4. The grand prize winner will be announced during Primetime Sports Today. Primetime Sports Today with Bob McCowan. And for further details and contest rules, you can go to sportsnet.ca/590. I found it interesting, Shai, when you were talking about a couple of platoons as a possibility, as a way of almost, it's almost like an enforced versatility. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Russ Martin as well. I think we can all agree. I mean, obviously there's a wish list for the Blue Jays here going into the offseason. You know, they need some pretty significant middle of the order bats if they lose Eddie and Jose. But are you expecting to see an upgrade, and Josh Tolley isn't going to be here. Are you expecting to see an upgrade, a significant upgrade behind the plate next year in terms of a backup catcher? Like, are we going to be looking at a Chris Heisey type guy, or somebody who, you know, is capable of playing two or three games a week, contributing offensively, and maybe giving, I'll throw this out, maybe giving Russ a spell at first base, because there's been some talk about trying to figure out a way to keep Russ in the lineup and maybe taking a little pressure off him. Do you see that happening, a more established backup catcher as opposed to just kind of a defensive specialist coming here?
I'd say 100% that's going to happen. Arden, you mentioned the numbers. It was 1,069 innings during the regular season this year and 89 or something more in the playoffs. I mean, that's a heavy load. And you know, I talked to him a bit after game five, and he said that knee issue from the sauna never really abated for him. And he wouldn't use that as an excuse, said it wasn't a factor, just limited him on the base paths. But
also you know, your legs, if you lose your legs, you can't hit.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So, and that's gotta be a factor. So I think that's going to be one of the priorities. I don't think it's probably easy to get done. And I wonder, too, if maybe you, just because of this pitching staff, you just say, look, let's get a strong, like a plus defender kind of guy, and sacrifice some offense in the way the Rays have done behind the plate last year's. You know, Ryan Hannigan's going to be a free agent. I think he's an interesting guy. He's one of the better receivers out there. I would fully expect that to be the case.
It'd be the perfect situation to start integrating a good young catcher, but they don't have one, right? There's no one in the system.
No, Reese McGuire is, but he's not ready.
He's not a 2017 guy.
No.
Jimenez has never developed. Pentecost might never catch.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that would be the ideal thing, would be to have a guy who would be cheap and young and your development guy, and you have him catch 40 games.
But you might be a year away from that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If McGuire develops, or if Pentecost, if his shoulder allows him to start throwing again, and I think he can emerge quickly. But yeah, that certainly is the ideal. But in the absence of that, I think you can certainly get there's enough inventory on the market that you can get yourself a reasonable backup guy that you'd feel okay playing 40 or 50 times.
Anything's going to be an upgrade over Josh Tolley.
Yes.
Let's be honest. He's not a major league
hitter. I was thinking more of almost needing a 1A and 1B catcher. and using Russ elsewhere, either as a DH or, again, maybe even letting him work out of first base because – go ahead, sorry.
Good offensive catchers just don't grow on trees.
Yeah.
They're not out there. Russ Martin has the second highest OPS of any catcher in baseball,
that's
the Buster
true.
Posey, over the last – and everybody's upset about his offense.
Yeah.
He's second to Buster Posey over the last 2 years since he's been in Toronto. So it's so hard to find catchers who hit. That's why I side with Shy with – get a defense guy, a defense first guy. Don't be stuck with no disrespect to Yarn Navarro, but a guy who doesn't really do either the side either side of the game particularly well.
Not at this stage.
Get one guy who excels at one part of the game, and if it's defense, great.
He'll still give you a better offense than Josh Tolley.
Yeah.
Even if he's a defensive specialist.
Any chance of Joey Votto ending up here? I mean, that name has been out there so often it makes me think it's never going to happen.
I think it could happen, but I don't think it will.
Yeah.
But I think if there was a decision to, it could probably go down.
It would be a complicated transaction.
It would be. I think there was some groundwork. I'm not sure how much of that would still exist at this point. But it's not. If there was a motivation, I think they could probably find a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the Reds just want to get out of that money,
and they need to
turn the page. And Joey Votto is, his insane numbers. What he hit 405 in the second half of the season.
His second half was outrageous.
He's just being wasted in a rebuild that's probably another 2 or 3 years away in Cincinnati.
But you get into that calculation of the amount of that financial commitment that the Reds would be willing to continue to eat would be absolute proportional to how much talent you're willing to give up. Plus, Votto's got to want to come since he's got a no trade.
Right.
But I don't think
that's going to be the issue.
But like
no, probably not. But what are you willing to give to offload some of the financial burden, or how much of the financial burden are you willing to take on in order to avoid giving up a lot?
I think it's
tricky, right, from a Jays point of view.
Sure. But I think around this table, we all believe that discussions took place at a certain point between the Jays and the Reds.
Yeah, in the previous administration, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and frameworks were presented. So if the ball has already been kind of moved up the field to a certain point where, you've already kind of got an understanding of where both sides are, it's that much easier to advance it further.
But circumstances have changed a little bit. Joey Votto was at a bit of a down point. There were some concerns about his knee. He didn't have a second half where he hit over 400. And, I'm fairly certain that he cleared waivers in August 2 years ago. I don't know for a fact that he did this past August. So when he cleared waivers 2 years ago, that's basically telling you that nobody's willing to take him and the Reds have to pay something to get rid of him. So that's where your discussion point started at that point. And that may have changed, and there may be other suitors. And I had someone suggest to me that, Boston would be a great fit for him.
Isn't Boston a great fit for everybody? Kind of,
sure.
Kind of work that way eventually.
So they're going to end up with both Eddie and Joey
Votto. Yeah, why not?
If you're a hitter, go play in that ballpark. Great. You're a lefty.
But, I'm not saying that's going to happen because I don't think it will for a number of reasons. But, the market for him would probably be a lot different now than it was 2 summers ago.
Be an interesting discussion with ownership here too, Shai. Because that would be, if you were going to take on a significant amount of that commitment, because how many years has he got left? Remind me.
7 and 190-ish.
Yeah. So that's not a decision that Mark Shapiro would make on his own.
No, but I mean, you're not taking. I would imagine anybody who gets him is not taking on more than 100 mil. And that's still a discussion point. But if you're looking at 7 at 100, you could look at that against what's going to take place in the free agent market this year and say,
so 7 and 100,
a bit more appealing.
So 7 and 100, and with Aaron Sanchez going the other way.
No, I think it would be lower tier than that.
Okay.
If the Reds could get a player of that ilk, I would think that they've done extremely well.
Seven years, 179. That's what he's got left.
See, what I'm wondering about Joey Votto, the same thing with Andrew McCutchen, though, this is a pretty good year. If you want to make a move, if you're a team that has that type of player and you want to make a move, this is a good year to do it because there's nothing in the free agent market.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whatever people are saying, that a lot of teams have got eyes ahead to the next free agent class, to the Harper and Machado 2018, probably the greatest free agent class of all time. This may be a good winter if you're moving a Votto, or you think you're going to have to move a Votto or a McCutcheon, I'm just throwing that name out there.
But because there's been talk about him, right?
This would be a good winter to do it.
Right. And the Pirates are in a position where their window may be still open, maybe it's closing. They're one of those, you know, gray area teams. And in some ways, sort of like the Blue Jays, that they have some pieces that can carry them to competition. But right now, you look at them and say, is this imminently a group that's going to get to the finish line in time? And I don't know you can say that for certain. And the worst thing is that you don't want to be what the Detroit Tigers were this year, right? Mm. Where you're old and you just don't quite get there and, you know, you're left holding the bag and where do you go from here? And that's why I think it's fascinating that there's some talk coming out of Detroit that
it's really interesting, isn't it?
They may look at moving someone like a Verlander or a Kinsler, those guys dramatically change the market. I mean, if Verlander is up for grabs, and I'm not sure that he is, but the fact that he's being floated is fascinating. I mean, that's going to dramatically change the market because there is no pitching out there.
There's none.
Some interesting parallels between the Blue Jays and the Tigers right now.
Yes. Yeah,
those are two teams that are pretty similar when you think about some interesting young pitching, some really aging veteran core in similar positions. Like, the Blue Jays are in a bit more of a nimble place financially right now than Detroit is because of some of the contracts that the Tigers have. But there's some interesting parallels there.
Well, speaking of things such as finances, there has been a change at the top of Rogers. It occurred recently. Of course, many people know about that. And when we come back, I will ask the question, could the change at the top of Rogers, is that going to make any difference in terms of a potential change of direction for the Blue Jays? We'll talk about it when the Blue Jays Roundtable continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It is a Blue Jays Roundtable. Arden Swelling, Shai Davidi, Stephen Brunt, and Jeff Blair. There has been a change at the top. Guy Lawrence is no longer the CEO of Rogers. There's a new man in place, John Natale. Is that going to make any difference, Stephen? I'll start with you, to the direction of this organization. I mean, what should Blue Jays fans make of this move?
Well, okay, I'm going to backtrack a little bit first. The Blue Jays are still part of a publicly traded company, a small part of a publicly traded company that makes the bulk of its money in the cell phone and cable business, right? So it's a bit of an odd mix, but that's the way it is. And there's a media component to the company as well, but it's even that is a tiny fraction of what Rogers is. And, you know, Rogers, like all publicly traded companies, will be run for the benefit of its shareholders. This is not the Detroit Tigers with Mike Ilitch, who's a million years old and wants to win a World Series before he dies. It's not going to ever be run like that. So that's the reality, and so there's always going to be a number attached to the Blue Jays in terms of payroll, which to some degree makes financial sense for a company that's trying to make a profit and look after its shareholders. That's the truth. So you look at Rogers and say, that's a huge company. They're the richest owners in baseball, but it's not a guy. It's not going to be so. It's never going to be like that. The full resources of this company are never going to be turned to winning a World Series. That's true. People might not like it. But it's, you know, that's never going to change. What may change, and we'll see, you know, is how you kind of put a holistic value on the Blue Jays' success, how you value that in the context of selling phones and cable and media and all of those other things. When you look at the emotional dynamic of the marketplace, you know, not just money in, money out, but, you know, what you may owe that marketplace in terms of, you know, every 3 million plus people show up and millions of people watch it on TV, and there's an emotional attachment to this product that there isn't to a whole bunch of other products. And if you can continue that and find ways to do it in a, you know, a way that's not irresponsible to your shareholders, could you then throw more money at it, especially in a time like this? Again, without complete and total knowledge of all of these things, I would say that was less likely under the previous administration. And it's possible that it could be more likely under a new administration to see the team a little differently within the context of the company. I don't think that adds up to a $200 million payroll.
Right.
But it probably adds up to more than they're spending now.
Sure.
General impression that I've had talking to a few people is that it was viewed positively that the Joe Natale imminent arrival has the potential to be good for the Blue Jays. But you know, to further Steven's point there, the one thing that one big change now with Mark Shapiro in place over Paul Beeston is I think the Blue Jays are better positioned to be integrated into the Rogers' wider goals. And because of that, that may open up some potential revenue streams that didn't exist before. Now, all this stuff in a lot of ways is still theoretical or in the planning, but there may be more opportunities for this team to find other avenues to extend its payroll and become a bigger part of the company, even though it is such a small percentage of the overall business.
Yeah, and I think that to that point, Shai, like you already see them throwing money at spring training, which they're going to do, right? They're going to throw an enormous amount of money to that stadium. So there's going to be a radical redo mm-hmm. of the Rogers Center, you know, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. That's coming. So that there is, I think that's part of what you're seeing is that they're committing on those fronts already. You know, payroll is a slightly different thing because it's less predictable.
Do you think that the, you know, having Joseph Natale in here now, do you think that might also, might we also see Edward Rogers play more of a role with this team?
I think it's entirely possible. Yeah. You know, I think he's more interested in baseball than mm-hmm. Some people have been here over the years. You know, yeah. I think he, you know, and, you know, like I think there's the possibility that it could be kind of a legacy thing. You know, his name's on the building, right? And his name's on the other building. And, you know, why do rich people get involved with sports? And, you know, it's often kind of a legacy project, right? We're mm-hmm. talking about Mike Ilitch. We're not talking about him because of his pizzas. We're talking about them because of the Red Wings and the Tigers. So mm-hmm.
tasty pies, though.
Yeah, they are. They are that. So, look, if that happened, I think if from a fan point of view, I think it would be a good thing mm-hmm. because it might, you know, kind of alter the bottom line.
I think this is part. If I could just cut
yeah,
it here, quick.
No, for yeah. sure,
it's part of what you were talking about earlier, Brent, with like the longer term culture change mm-hmm. that is going on right now, and I think that. Under Paul Beeston, Alex Anthopoulos, I think there was more opposition between the team and ownership. Mm-hmm. And I think now you're going to try to see a bit more harmony. And everyone's going to say, hey, let's just make life good for everyone and let's help each other here instead of there being this constant butting of heads.
It was definitely a fiefdom.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays were definitely a fiefdom under Beeston.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the biggest shifts under Shapiro.
And you bring in Mark Shapiro, who's all about collaboration, mm-hmm. all about asking everybody's opinion, all about working together and empowering others and like all these like kind of, you know, Ivy League buzzwords that people hate. But,
makes
you know,
sense.
It gets you a new spring training facility. It gets you more payroll. You know, it's helped. You've seen some barriers come down for the Blue Jays. You look at the high performance department, which is a relatively small thing to pull off. It wasn't being pulled off under Paul Beeston. Right.
But the trickiest thing with, you know, with ownership, and I, you know, yeah, this goes back to like the Marlins deal and all of the things that they did, you know, in that offseason. You know, what owners want to know is if I spend $180 million on payroll, how many games are you going to win? And of course, the sports guys go, well, yeah, we don't know. You know, mm-hmm. it could work out. And you know, you make big promises, but those guys, if they're, you know, again, and they're not about the kind of nuances of sport, they want results, right? If you could say, I guarantee if you spend this much money, we'll put 3.5 million people in the stadium and we'll win the World Series, they'd do it.
Is anybody here surprised at how Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have ended up being able to work with John Gibbons or vice versa, I guess? Is anybody here surprised? Because I think like a lot of people, I admit, I thought John Gibbons is going to be fired this year because I thought that the new guys would want their own guy in here.
They worked with Bud Black. They worked with Eric Wedge. They worked with Terry Francona.
Yeah. Charlie Manuel.
Yeah, like we're not exactly
well,
talking
didn't
about
end real well.
Well,
we're not exactly talking about stat heads there, right? You know,
yeah,
like
okay.
at some
That's
point,
fair. That's a good point.
Your major league manager is going to have to be a bit of a, you know, kind of dirty guy in a way. You know what yep. I mean? Like a bit of a dirtbag. You know, like he's going to have to be that, and I mean that in the endearing sense. Like it's going to have to be a player's guy, a guy who understands the game inside the lines. And doesn't, you know, necessarily isn't straight spreadsheets.
See, I think a lot of people in the media, and I'm going to, and maybe myself to a certain degree, I think we misread Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins a little bit. You know, maybe we're a little too suspicious.
Well, what I've seen from those guys is that they, like, there's been a lot of change, right? They brought in a lot of people. We all know that. But what they've also done in a lot of cases is step back and watch and listen and try and figure out who they got, you know, mm-hmm. including John Gibbons, right? I don't think they had a preconceived notion about John Gibbons before they You know, and I think they let him operate this year, and they watched him operate, and they made a judgment based on that. And, you know, again, there's a whole bunch of reasons why you might not change the manager at this stage. But yeah, I maybe not quite a blank slate, but I think he really pretty close to a blank slate with these guys. They let him prove himself.
And Gibby's got a good reputation in the game.
He does.
You know, you just go down to the batting cage at Rogers Center, and the opposite, it's like a lineup of opposition coaches coming up to Gladhand, you know, and to BS with him. You know, like he's got... Yeah, I think he's got a good reputation around baseball.
Yeah, you know, the theory, the question I've always had, that if he didn't talk in the Southern drawl and he just sounded crisper and more formal, would people doubt him the way that they do?
No, I think there's no doubt that factors into it.
And the other thing, too, that I really believe has occurred a lot is that John Gibbons has evolved a little bit to the new regime where – you know, I don't think he's sitting there saying, oh, screw the numbers, whatever. He's listened to the different analytics. You know, when he was looking at different lineup permutations, he sent it up to the analytics department and he said, you know, if I pair this guy or if we do this, does it make, what kind of difference does it make over the long haul? So, you know, this is someone who evolved, whose thinking has evolved a little bit,
right,
or goes beyond what people would think of it and meshes a little bit.
Well, look at the Sanchez decision, you know, right? Where, you know, he was one of the voices involved in that decision.
Well, not only that, I think, I don't know if you were there when Ross Atkins was talking about how they had actually talked about moving Carrera into the leadoff spot against the left-hander in the playoffs. And John had basically, as you said, well, you know, talk to the analytics guys. Let's see if this works out. You mentioned Aaron Sanchez. We've got 4 minutes left. We have not talked about pitching. Safe to say that this is the best state the Blue Jays pitching has been in 10 years since Carpenter. I'm going to say since Carpenter, Halliday, and Escobar, where we're here, and people were trying to figure out just what the hell Kelvin Escobar was. They could bring all these guys back. I mean, R.A. Dickey's not coming back, but they could bring...
You've got your five.
You got your five, and you may have... Again, I guess it depends on what you do with Biagini. Your bullpen may be pretty much intact, too.
That's where I think some work needs to be done, is the
bullpen. Absolutely.
Because Brett Cecil's leaving, maybe
you think Brett Cecil's leaving?
He's leaving. I think he's going to get money.
Really? Yeah. Would you bring Brett Cecil back?
Depending on the contract. I mean, I don't want to pay him Tony Sipp money.
Right.
And he might get even more than that.
Right.
He might get 3 years, 20.
Well, boy, if he does. It's you know, even this season, you know, since he got hurt last year, he looked like himself for, 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, you know, from a Blue Jay point of view, I think it would be interesting because during that last stretch, he looked really good. He looked like himself. But there was a lot of time in there when he did.
You know, Ben Nicholson Smith and I had probably a two-month argument over whether he's getting 2 or 3 years. I finally relented, and he's going to get 3. I think just talking to people in the industry, I've only had, I think, 2 people say he doesn't get 3. Everyone else says he gets 3. And... you know, are you going to be comfortable spending that?
Do you need, if you're the Blue Jays, again, you got your 5 starters, but are you at all concerned that Aaron Sanchez made it through this year, got his 200 innings? Are you all concerned that, you know, the Piper may have to be paid next June, perhaps with him, or May, you know, that...
Or any of them. I mean, they haven't had a significant injury to a starter in 3 years, 4 years now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they've had a remarkable run, and kudos to the training staff and obviously to the players themselves. But they don't have a 6 right now.
No.
And Joe Biagini may have to be stretched out to be that 6.
Boy, I like him in the bullpen.
I know, and it would be a loss, but, you know, that you don't unless you can find a guy, because Connor Green and Sean Reed Foley have just touched AA. You can't expect them to be the guys, and nobody wants to trade away controllable pitching. So unless you can find a sort of Carlos Villanueva swing type of guy, or, you know, a Jesse Chavez-esque guy, which I don't think anybody wants, then you don't have the insurance.
Plus, you may have to trade a pitcher. You know, we talk about controllable pitching. You may have to trade a controllable pitcher to get what you want for position players.
Exactly.
Like that's the one chip they have right now, are young pitchers, controllable pitchers. So we may be subtracting from that group before you start adding the depth.
If you're talking about a 5 or 6, there's going to be Gavin Floyd types out there this winter that you can bring in.
Or four A guys.
But that movie doesn't end well.
Yeah. I'm going to go around the table here. We've got a minute left, a minute and a half left. I'm not going to ask whether Eddie, Jose, or Michael Saunders, any of those three are back. I am going to ask you this, though, because we're talking about controllable pitchers. Marcus Stroman here next year, is he the guy you think maybe has to be moved to get what you need to get?
I wonder if he, I think all their young pitchers, say for Sanchez, get floated around a little bit just to see where they got them, because I think they wanted some controllable position players.
Arden?
Is the question, do I think he'll be here next year? Yes.
Okay.
Boy, I think you're going to have to trade somebody. And the names are ones that people aren't going to want to hear, right? They're Stroman, Osuna, Sanchez.
Hmm.
There's your three best chips. You know, you don't want to give up any of them, but what else are you going to trade?
Yeah. Gentlemen, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks for your availability all year. I know what it's like to be on the road shy and have to service several outlets at the same time, and I really appreciate your availability and your help this year. Arden, same as you. It's been great. You've been able to come in studio a number of times, and it's been terrific.